Good morning, our guest from Benetech.
Good morning.
You are more than welcome. We've been, you know, longing for this moment to meet with Benetech. I think since 2009, we haven't met, since we were there, but we haven't met as the committee and Benetech. We are the Select Committee on Labor and Public Enterprises. Select Committee. I am Priscilla Temba, the chairperson of this committee. I represent Mpumalanga, the beautiful province where the sun rises. Members will introduce themselves. Afterwards, then Benetech will introduce, the CEO will introduce himself, and but it's like gender is not really balanced, but we'll look at that. And then we've got PMG, we've got our staff. Over to you, honorable members.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I am Herman Groenewald, member of this committee and representing the Northwest Province.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Zolam Lenzana, a member of the Select Committee representing the province of the Eastern Cape.
Good morning. My name is Renelle Barreto. I'm the researcher for the committee.
Good morning. I'm Melele Sibis. I'm the committee secretary.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members. Today we are led by Ms. Zanele Satraya. If I could just let her to introduce our team. My name is Tomo Mahapi. I'm the CEO of Center.
Good morning, Chairperson. For the purpose of this meeting, I am leading the Center team. We don't have a chairperson at this moment, so I was elected to be the chairperson for today. My name is Anelis Lajoyo. I am an executive director of Benetech. I'll allow the rest of the board to introduce themselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Monde Ndleleni from Benetech. I'm responsible for government information. Thank you.
Morning, Chair. My name is Protav Tili. I'm the CFO of Benetech.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Paris Mashile. I'm the non-executive director of Center.
Morning, Chair and members. My name is Mesudi Dlamini, a non-executive director at Center. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Leah Kumalo, non-executive director at Center.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Nataka Namunya. I am the company secretary for Benetech.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Sibongile Makopi. I am working for the Department of Communications. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Mike Selly from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Like I have said, you are all more than welcome. Other members will really find us on the way. They will be joining us, as you all know, or maybe to inform you that we in the NCOP, we are few. And we serve in many committees, but because we represent provinces, as they come in, we will introduce themselves. But at the moment, can we start? Who's leading the presentation? The demo hub. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, members. We are not ready to make this presentation. And the brief was to, when we got the message to come, was to deal with at least the matter on the the issue of encryption of the Sentex signal, I think, as it is crossing the borders. I'll give a bit of status on that. And then secondly, then to review the Sentex corporate plan and also look at the status of where we are in terms of the objectives that we set ourselves there. And we'll do the corporate plan in terms of the flagship project that we set ourselves for. And also we look at the state of viability of Sentex as a state-owned enterprise, whether it is able to, it's financially healthy enough to be able to continue executing its mandate. And that will be in the form of a review of the financial performance for the first 6 months of the financial year. On the matter of eBotswana, we did provide a presentation. Members have the presentation, so I'll be referring to the page numbers in the presentation. On page 5, the we'd just like to note respectfully that the matter between Sentex and eBotswana, eBotswana is a sister company of ETV, the local broadcaster. eBotswana is registered in Botswana. Is currently in court, sub judice. The matter has been heard by the judge. What we'll provide is, with your permission, is a background of what the issues are. And with your permission, we'll maybe not provide the substantive issues while we're waiting for the case. Thank you very much. The on page 6, eBotswana instituted proceedings against Sentex as the first respondent, but also SABC and ICASA as respectively the second and third respondent, complaining about the reception of SABC channels in Botswana via satellite transmission. And in particular, noting that the services were freely available, meaning that somebody can get a decoder generally in the open market and be able to watch the SABC. And Ibutwana's case was that Sentex was liable for making those services available without the necessary encryption. The background to the story is that for Sentex's normal operation, when we distribute content, we'll take the content mostly, say, SABC television from Auckland Park, and then to bring it to site here, for example, at the site in Tigerberg, we use satellite to distribute the content to all the 220 sites across the country, and then redistribute them for for terrestrial television. The result is that the satellite footprint is then goes beyond the borders and crosses into the southern countries. The method, so what the obligation, I mean, what we need to do and what has been happening all the time is that the content is getting encrypted over the satellite platform so that typically somebody outside of the country cannot watch the content unless they have the right decoder. Some time ago, around 2004-2005, it turned out that the security system that protects the content over the satellite platform, it was found that it was had been hacked, meaning that somebody could create a decoder and be able to watch the content and essentially not breach the security system, but watch the content as encrypted. And as a result of that, the content from the SABC is therefore viewable in the southern countries. But one has to buy decoders.
Mr. Bibe, we are joined by the Honorable Lebohane Mabitsa. She is representing Limpopo, and she's the whip of the committee. And next to her is the Honorable Dibie. He is representing Western Cape. He is the member of the committee. You are welcome, members. We apologize for starting before you arrive. Over to you. And the one who has just entered is the Honorable Sibande. He is representing Mpumalanga. He is a member of the committee. Thanks. You can
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The result is that somebody can buy decoders and be able to watch this secured content. But there are other complications. There are other obligations on different governments in the region on allowing some of the decoders to be made available in the countries. And that's why it's not a very easy case. What we have done in the meantime, however, is that we have CENTEC has acquired a new security system to encode content, such that the normal terrestrial television services actually being distributed within the new encrypted system. So it is not the one that is being watched in the CENTEC countries. The implementation, the core challenge is really to switch off the old encryption system. What we have, however, is that we still have some residential customers, people sitting at homes, who are still in the country, who are still watching the SABC channels using the old decoders. Later on, when we discuss the DGT project, you'll know that the broadcast digitalization policy of 2008. Specifically addressed people who are currently not covered by television. We have 8% of the population across all provinces currently not receiving terrestrial television. When we, in the digital migration policy, it was very clearly stated that satellite should be used as a method of providing services to people who are currently not provided by terrestrial television. We will note also that there is other policy implications in terms of decoders and set-top boxes. And as a result of that, the people who are watching the CBC channels on the old system will need to be, most of them will actually need to be migrated onto the new DTT, the new satellite platform for DTT. And most of a lot of them will be subsidized by government based on the subsidy policy. And therefore, the decoder that we have to switch will also be subject to the new decoder specifications coming out of the DGT project. And that's the reason why the switch off of the old system is a little bit delayed, because otherwise we would have to be dealing with services to people. The matter was had in court between ourselves and Ibotswana on the 20th and 29th of July. And judgment is pending, and we are doing everything we can in terms of we have certainly protected the entire broadcast platform for the 92% of the population. That shouldn't be a problem moving forward. Then, looking at our corporate plan. The corporate plan identified a number of flagship projects. The key one being the DTT project, which is the digital terrestrial migration project. The project essentially encompasses migrating all the analog all the television services from analog to digital platforms, with a large range of benefits for the country, benefits for different stakeholders in the broadcasting industry. Just to give a sense of the difference between analog and digital, currently SABC, for example, has 3 channels on analog. Each one of those channels on SABC can actually go into digital, can result in about 18 channels. So in fact, in the digital program right now, SABC has been allocated enough space to create about 18 television channels. And the country will still be saving spectrum along the way, meaning that the spectrum that has been allocated to, say, SABC 2 and 3 will then be available for other content providers into the future. ETV, with one channel right now, probably will have an allocation to be able to transmit about 10 channels. And the other allocation has been given to MNET,
which currently has one channel, and it can also go to up to about 5 to 8 channels. But also the significant value of the DTT project is the ability now of the broadcast environment to accommodate quite robustly community broadcasters that are located in the provinces. We currently have community broadcasters in the Eastern Cape in the form of Nelson Mandela Bay TV, which we just launched right now in September, in KZN, one KZN, in Gauteng, Soweto, and Tshwane TV, in Cape Town, Cape TV. And there are some other people in different other provinces who are approaching ICASA to be able to launch community television. The digital platform, in fact, allows the community television broadcasters to almost operate at the same level of scale and quality as your normal ETVs and SABCs, but probably while giving the services having the local flavor, I mean, retaining the community broadcaster flavor. So there's a lot of benefits of migrating from the satellite and from analog to digital. The role of Centec in this area is to provide signal distribution to all the broadcasters. The digital migration policy of 2008 specified that Centec should build a digital network to be able to support both the public broadcaster and also any commercial broadcasters that may come. So the project then essentially entails changing the entire television infrastructure to move from analog to digital, and quite a substantial project and a flagship project for the country. In terms of deadlines, the first deadline was for migrating was set by Cabinet and announced in January of this year, and that is December 2013. December 2013 as a national deadline, in that everybody, all the analog television services for the three broadcasters as mentioned, should have been migrated to digital. We are also, as a country, part of the International Telecommunications Union and subject to some of the agreements there, and agreements that actually protect the integrity of some the broadcasting and telecommunication systems as far as spectrum assignments are concerned. The ITU has set a deadline of June 2015, after which countries that haven't moved to digital will no longer have the protection of the treaties that have been signed there in terms of signal interferences around the borders. So the key deadline of the project is December 2013 as a national target, and then June 2015 as the international target. In January of this year, the Minister of Communications then, Minister Pareachi, announced a cabinet decision that had been taken about a month or so earlier, that the standard for digital broadcasting had changed from the old DVB-T standard to the next generation of DVB-T, which is DVB-T2. In essence, Centec had already started implementing the digital network since 2006. What this entailed was that we then had to do a sub-project of migrating the existing infrastructure that we have to the new standards. At the end of March of 2011, we had put infrastructure already to be able to cover 60% of the population. We'll show the maps exactly where the 60% sits across the country. I must say that the 60% is based on the decisions that were taken in 2006, and we are currently considering through the leadership of the DOC different ways of looking how at how we move forward, looking at the different requirements of provinces. In terms of the corporate plan, March 2012, the target was to have covered 74% of the population with a new standard, with the signals available. But we also acknowledged while we're doing the corporate plan that Centec has a bit of a history. Centec comes out of a difficult situation. The turnaround of Centec in essence and in earnest started in April of 2011, before which Centec did have significant operational challenges. One of those challenges was in the area of supply chain management, where the board that came in at the in April of 2011, did a lot of work in identifying challenges in supply chain and cleaning up that environment. The mantra that we are using as we develop this project is do things right and do them fast, but do them right. So the board in particular in this financial year has spent a lot of time considering the strength of our supply chain function and resolve that we should get it right first, supply chain, because we're talking about substantial amounts of public money being invested in this project before we move forward. So the while we are still pushing for a target of 60% plus, we probably not going to reach 74%. Without, and that won't compromise the deadline, certainly the December 2013 deadline. But we're moving forward with comfort that we are going to be managing public finances as required by the PFMA. In terms of the moving forward in this financial year, we said that we would launch TVBT2 according to the cabinet decision. We would roll out what we call phase 5 and phase 6, just explain where the coverage is. The digital broadcasting changes, in fact, the way the broadcasting industry looks like. I have mentioned that SABC operates on 3 channels right now. In the digital broadcasting environment, now it operates on 18 channels, which means that their cost structure changes significantly. And the content cost structure is significantly. And what they require from us as the cost of distributing those 18 channels also, the expectation is very different. I mean, particularly they're looking for much lower tariffs in order to sustain the businesses. In fact, all the broadcasters are looking for a different approach from Centec. So we're spending a lot of time right now looking at the new tariff model to make sure that both Centec and the broadcast industry are sustainable moving into the future, and that the country is able to get the benefit of the digital platforms. And we are hoping, I mean, there's indication that the performance period, which is the formal period for the beginning of a period called dual illumination, where digital signals will be available properly. That period will may start around April or May in 2012, and by that period we should have signed the contracts with all the broadcasters en route to the December 2013 deadline. We also printed or showed in on page 12 there's a map on the next page 13, areas where when the country launches the performance period in April, which areas will have the DTT coverage, but also noted the work that needs to be done there in order to enable DTT. In addition to manage to upgrading the electronic infrastructure, such as the transmitters, the PIEs, those are program insertion equipment, the combiners, there's a lot of work that needs to be done on the actual antennas themselves. The typical mast for broadcast signal distribution is in excess of 150 meters above ground. Very, very high. And in a lot of cases, at least right now, we're looking moving forward in around 19 or so sites. We have to send people up to maybe 200 meters up to go and install new antennas. And each antenna unit can weigh as much as 2 or 3 tons. And that's a lot of work, careful work, specialized work. The skills are there in the country. There's a lot of skills in the country. But one can expect that the issues around operational health and safety then become extremely critical. This is the single biggest intervention on the broadcast infrastructure that the country has had in such a short period of time since television was started in the 70s. So there's a lot of work that we're doing in making sure that we upgrade the mast infrastructure. And then there's a lot of work also in upgrading the civils. Using
lots of skills in the country around buildings, the civil works, the mechanical work, the electrical work, with the challenge of regionalizing that work so that we can do the work efficiently and also make sure that the entire country benefits from this project. And then in terms of the coverage on page 13, those sites, when we do launch, the sites that are in red there will be the sites that will be have the DTT signal over them. At a minimum, we know that every province at least will have DTT signal over it. And we do note, however, that the majority of people in Gauteng will have, most of them in fact, will have the coverage. We've been challenged by the Minister Bullet to look at how to do the launch, but also in such a way that it works well in terms of public participation. For example, the SNTEC switches on the digital signal. We have to have decoders available in the communities. We have to have the home environment, but the areas outside, I mean in the homes, they have to be tuned properly and they have to be the right ones. Some of the areas are very, very old areas. On their old TV sets. We need to make sure that people know when to get decoders. The people who will be subsidized by government, which is about almost half of the TV-owning households, according to current estimates, need to know how to engage with government to get the decoders and the right subsidy levels. So there's a lot of work that will need to be done beyond the work that CENTEC does here. So the minister was saying to us, telling us to look at the design of the launch towards December 2013 that allows the whole program, particularly the community engagement program, to work efficiently. So that, for example, if the launch has happened in a community, then there is no need to go to that community, and everybody in that community, in and around that community, has received services and paid attention to them. And that is balanced by doing an approach similar to the one that we have, which is trying to balance across provinces moving forward. So when we launch, at least in March or April, the page 13 shows the areas that will have the digital coverage. And then page 15 will then show the coverage as it increases as we build the network according to our current plans. And then page 17, as we build the plans, as we build the network. And then page 21 shows what the digital coverage will look like when we are done. This essentially, this kind of coverage in all the colors mimics the current analog television coverage. And clearly, it means that we still have about 8% of the population not receiving digital signals according to this. So the CENTEC has taken, noting this issue, and noting also that the broadcast digital migration policies calls for 100% access for television services, particularly public broadcasting services, and the use of satellite as a method of filling the gaps that are there, that the 8% of the population. We then incorporated that challenge in our plans. I think previously that 8% was almost a given that people will continue not receiving television. We also noted, however, that on page 22, that it's not enough to put the satellite infrastructure there. The subsidy policy that applies to the terrestrial television, somebody who is within a terrestrial coverage area and is receives a government subsidy based on the need as established. If there's a person who stays outside of the coverage area and there's a satellite signal over them, and they would have received a government subsidy under terrestrial, then we said to the DOC that those people should also receive a similar subsidy to be able to receive the satellite television. And that to complete the implementation
of satellite as a gas filler. That essentially has been certainly incorporated, particularly in consideration of the challenges in the Northern Cape. And on page 23, we show the satellite solution. There are two models that we are looking at, and one very, very cost-effective, the one on the bottom, which shows that both the satellite and the terrestrial receiving devices can share the same infrastructure, and that we won't be doubling or increasing the cost of satellite as a gap filler in any significant way. If we do that, then on page 24, then we show in yellow there will be coverage of potential access via satellite. So that is in those areas where the signal won't be received terrestrially in the normal areas. And as a result of that, then on page 25, we then show that we'll then be able to meet the challenge of the PDM, which is 100% coverage and access for television services, particularly the public broadcasting services from the SABC. And I must say that there's a particular case around Northern Cape where the middle area of Northern Cape has been set aside in support of the Square Kilometre Array project, which is the national project to put radio astronomy equipment there. And the requirement from the international community, if the bid was to come to the country, is that there shouldn't be any radio or television signal in and around those areas there. And we've worked with the SKA project of the Department of Science and Technology quite extensively in support of the bid and to clear that area. And the DOC has then included in the policy, draft policy of the disarmigration, that that area in particular, satellite will be used as a way to get broadcasting services, and that the decoder subsidy will apply there. And again, that the gaps there actually are there for a particular reason in support of the Square Kilometre Array project. And generally because also it's a very sparsely populated area currently, mostly not receiving analog services. The Inner Corporate Plan also laid out the budget over the 3-year period. This financial year, 2011-2012 up to 2013-2014, about the specifying the almost at a quarter level how much has to be spent on what. And we must know that because of what the board decided that let's fix our supply chain, most of the money hasn't been used in this financial year. But we have gotten our supply chain function back in order, and we should be back on track by the fourth quarter, particularly in terms of the commitment. I will be able to commit the monies by the end of the financial year, but not necessarily use the cash. But committing the money clearly with a clean process for committing that money, the procurement process, I think would be a good indication that we are back on track and we are then able to execute the rest of the project properly. The target also in terms of the plan from a risk management point of view is to make sure that we take out the moving forward, we take out all supply chain risks out of the project, particularly the last year. So most of the commitments of the project will be done certainly in the first quarter of 2012-2013 for the rest of the infrastructure required. I must note that, I mean, if one looks at the where most of the money will be spent generally, the first element is the transmitters. The transmitters will probably finish that, make that full commitment in terms of a choice of supply certainly by the end of this financial year, by the end of March. The second one is the antennas, including installation, and again that is the procurement process is not difficult. I mean, what is the most important thing there is the spend of the money because the work is so specialized.
and what you see there in terms of the timeline and how much money we'll be spending taking into consideration the health and safety issues. And then there's not much left there. I mean, other than the other big one is the electrical. Once we have to upgrade our the electrical systems even around the sites. There's a lot of skills in there that that also shouldn't be a problem in terms of how to. There's not much execution risk on that line. Looking at the podcast community in general, there are a couple of other activities that are going on outside of Centec, but that have an effect on the DTT project within Centec. The podcast digital migration policy was passed by government in 2008. The standard was changed in 2011 in January, and the DOC has subsequently issued a revised policy to accommodate the changes that came as a result of the cabinet decision on standards and also on the deadline. So that is the review of the BDM policy still out in being discussed with the industry. All the responses have closed, and the DOC is currently reviewing the responses with a view of finalizing the policy quickly. The other issue is the regulations from ICASA. ICASA passed the DTT regulations in 2010, around February. Again, as a result of the review of the policy driven by the cabinet decision, ICASA has issued a draft review of the DTT regulations. Moving them from being migration regulations to being DTT regulations. Again, the industry has responded and ICASA is scheduled to hold hearings before the end of this calendar year on the regulations. So we believe that the final revised policy and regulations should be completed certainly before the beginning of the performance period. We're working with different broadcasters on their different requirements. We have SABC with a public service mandate similar to ours for universal access. And then we're also building a network for commercial broadcasters, free to air, also pay. And those are driven differently, and we're working with them on that. There is also the issue of set-top box control that members may have, will certainly have picked up. There's an issue about physical protection of the set-top boxes that will be subsidized by government. If one looks at the estimates of around 5 million households that will be subsidized by government and the unit figure for each set-top box, then this is quite a substantial investment by government into the country. And the policy, the BDM policy, in fact, calls for a system of physically protecting the set-top boxes so that they don't get out of the country, because otherwise they would be usable in any other place that is using the same standard for broadcasting. This is an issue that has been in the industry for quite some time now, and we do hope that it will be closed. We do participate. We offer our advice as an arm particularly of the DOC, independent of the different interests of the different broadcasters, and we've made such inputs. We've also the issue of community television broadcasters in the first migration DTT regulations, and in fact, if anyone could have gotten it from the policy was not very strong on the inclusion of community broadcasters on the DTT platform. And the migration policies followed so that the only community broadcaster that was allocated spectrum on DTT in the old migration policies was TBN, whereas the regulator was already licensing, so we did TBN, Sony TV, and so on and so forth. And it's clearly against the idea of making sure that community broadcasters serve local communities, but also do so with the same types of
facilities as all other broadcasters. So we have pushed for the inclusion of community broadcasters clearly and strongly in policy, which has been done, and also in regulation, which has been done. So all community broadcasters are now freely, they can freely participate in the DTT program, and there are no more channels for any new broadcasters. moving on, the other project that we're doing is what we call the Low Power Expansion Project. This is a project that we are doing with the SABC in the context of a shared mandate on universal access to public broadcasting services. Earlier, we noted that we still have a coverage problem in from universal point of view, from universal access point of view. About 8% of the population are still not receiving any kind of television, and when you talk about 92% that receive, in fact, we're talking about people who receive at least one channel from the SABC. So most of it is SABC, in fact, is SABC 2. If you now look at coverage for SABC 1 and 3, it's much lower. This should have been sorted out, I mean, this has been dealt with between SABC and CENTEC over the years. I mean, CENTEC left SABC and was incorporated in 1996. With a mandate, when one looks at the Triple Inquiry of 1995, the mandate for CENTEC, as it leaving SABC, was quite clear, was to independently push for universal access, providing the services not only for the SABC but also in support of community broadcasters. And that over the years hasn't been done very well on television. On radio, we have a different type of challenge, which is the challenge of diversity. If you look at the Triple Inquiry in 1995, called for coverage of all language services. It said that by 1996, 90% of people who want to listen to a particular language service should be able to get that language service anywhere in the country. So if one wants to listen to Chabela FM, Ligualaguala, you don't have to be in Mpumalanga. You should be able to listen to Ligualaguala in Cape Town, anywhere around the country. And the target was 90% by 1995. Now, what you currently have is only SAFM and RSG have that kind of coverage. We still have Ukhozi covering only 46% of the population, even though it has the highest audience levels. It's about just over 6 million listeners. You still have, and that's the highest one. I mean, you still have Sobo covering slightly less, and then by the time you get to Gwalagwala, I mean, you're talking to about, less than 20% population coverage. So that challenge in the Triple Inquiry has not been met at all. So part of the Low Power Project is kind of solving at least the universal access problem for television services, filling the 20%, the 8% gap, but also along the way trying to fill the radio challenge. I mean, in certain places, we still have people in the country who do not have access to radio services, normal public radio services. So the Low Power Project is saying that let's go to the areas, most of the areas, I mean, in fact, all the areas that have been identified for this project are in remote areas, typically in from a topology in fairly challenging areas. I mean, it will be either in a valley where your typical site does not reach people. So you have to have a specialized unit that covers the community directly. And that's why we call it low power, because not high power, is probably in a very difficult terrain. So it's targeted to the community and therefore also low cost, because it also has to make allow the SABC to be sustainable and continue this program. The target for the three-year period. In fact, this project has targets starting with this financial year and then moving into the next two financial years on a three-year period is 100 sites, such low-power sites, for over the next 3 years, for each of the 3 years going forward. We are currently we've rolled out about 38,000. In fact, right now the sites that are ready by the 30th of November will be more than 50. And the challenge that we've been having is the access to sites to put the equipment. And I'll talk about it a little bit later. We will still be able to make the target. We're working quite hard with the SABC on this project to make sure that we have 100 sites as per the program late in this financial year. Recently, we launched Vuputa, which is in the province. The people had not had television or radio services there. Last week, it was Francisras in Northern Cape. We have done Singer. The next ones that we are doing, the seven sites that are ready to be launched are in Mpumalanga, in KZN, and in Free State. And if you look at the profile of the project, you'll find that the sites are in all provinces. Every province has this problem, probably with the exception of Gauteng. The low power, this project does not make use of the specialized mast infrastructure. In fact, most of the time, we can make use of the infrastructure that is normally provided already by the mobile operators. So we have engaged Vodacom, and Vodacom has made a lot of their sites available. Telkom has made a lot of their sites available, and MTN the same. But we're trying to accelerate that and make sure that the operators also see this not just as a normal business opportunity, but as a serious universal access problem. But the major opportunity is really the local governments and municipalities. They do have many facilities that we can use to put up the infrastructure. And then what we've done is because of the challenge that I will show, we've put in government relations into the project in particular to make sure that the all levels of government, provincial particularly and local, understand the benefits of this project to the local communities. We say that to ourselves that it should not be a difficult thing to get access to a water tower or to a municipal building to provide services to people, broadcasting services for the first time. That if we haven't made the case should be very, very clear to the local leadership. And it shouldn't be, if that is not clear, it is our problem in making that message clear. But we do request, as a national project and a public service mandate project, we do taking all the assistance that we can get in getting the right message to the local authorities on access to sites so that we can clear this project. I mean, most of the cases, the one finds that there's no electricity and you have to push ESCOM to put electricity onto to the site. As I said, the sites are typically quite low on access to infrastructure. So we've done a lot of work, and we've put our government relations in Monday in particular on the low power project to clear the backlog of access to sites. Then moving forward on the National Wireless Broadband Plan, on page 35, we in the corporate plan we also were challenged by the Department of Communications to develop a broadband plan that looks at particularly the problems of access, broadband access and internet access, particularly in the areas of education and healthcare and also government services. As we were doing the research, it became quite clear that we know the broadband access rate in the country are fairly low and getting lower compared to not only other countries outside of the continent, but also compared to countries in the continent. Broadband access in Kenya is probably, from a percentage point of view, is starting to get high. In North Africa, it's quite high compared to us. In particular, when one then looks at the application of broadband in the school environment, that's even just normal access to normal internet access. Find that we have about 27,000 schools in basic education in the country. Probably only around 5,000 of them are connected in any kind of meaningful way, meaning that you're looking at 23,000 schools in basic education that are not connected. And that translates into millions of learners. I mean, every year, if there's 1.4 million learners coming in into the system, every year, much fewer learners leave the system after matric, maybe 600,000 recent figures. The 1.4 million kids in the portion of them in the 23,000 schools go to that period without any access to this online services, without access to the benefits within the learning environment of access. We took this challenge in that context. We took it in the context also from a healthcare point of view that the quality of healthcare can improve significantly with the application of communication technologies. We also noted various statistics that have shown that the economic growth rates at national and also at local levels, there's a correlation between broadband access and also growth rates of local economies at a rate such that for every certain percentage point in the broadband access that is a related percentage point in economic growth. I think the correlation is 1.3. So we incorporated a national wireless broadband plan into the corporate plan. That called for implementation between this financial year and completing the process by the end of 2014 financial year. When we got into the project in NS, we found there were a number of stakeholders that had been started working on this initiative. In particular, looking at the readiness of provinces or the work that provinces had done in preparation for such work, we found that stakeholders had agreed that KZN had actually done quite a lot of preparatory work through their Department of Economic Development. And it was decided that we would, CENTEC and other SOEs would work on KZN as a province and complete it, draw lessons learned, and then over the next 2 to 3 years, roll out the program for in the rest of the country and other provinces. We also noted that CENTEC has been challenged before in this area to provide broadband services and also to connect schools in the Dinaledi project, and about 500 million was allocated to CENTEC in around 2007 for as initial capital for this project. The money has not been used since because of at the time issues that there were there between the Department of Finance and Communications around the CENTEC business plan. There was, because the Department of Finance at the time, National Treasury, had problems with the CENTEC business plan. And things are slightly different right now, but there's still similar kind of challenges. We also looked at maximizing the use of other SOEs. I mean, if in this venture, it is a public service mandate that calls for a reduction or minimization of the cost of access. And therefore, the motive is not a profit motive, it's a universal access motive. If one goes into rural areas as a private company, it is known that the business case is challenging for a normal private company. But if one goes with a public service mandate, one can create business models that allow both sustainability and low access to services. In that regard, the Department of Communications asked us to look at the typical model that we can employ with Infraco and USASA and SOEs to make this a reality. But also, we also looked at the involvement of local communities in the in the running of whatever infrastructure that we put in there. So the model on page 36 that we came up with was making use of the existing investment that government already made in Infraco in particular on international and national backhaul and also local backhauls. And also the Centec providing the what is called the access network, which is the last mile, which is the one that connects essentially the end users to the rest of the network. And then we looked at the model of involvement of local communities, both as partners in the operations of the infrastructure, and also in using the infrastructure. And we then looked at ISASA as a, rightly as the agency to facilitate the personal involvement of the local communities. Moving to page 38, we have done quite extensive work in KZN in mapping out the coverage. Web. So we have teams that are working in the province that are visiting each and every site where we can potentially put in our infrastructure. Looking at the number looking at the number of schools on page 39, looking at the number of clinics, looking at the number of post offices, police stations, and other government institutions, to see, and looking at what the service that we can provide to those government institutions. In the three districts that we have done and completed, we've looked at 1,251 of those public institutions. Just to give you the essence of the scale of this, the 1,049 schools represent about 507,000 learners in basic education that can be covered. And now if you go into fires, so I'm going to complete that, we can in fact get our, we know that will be covering the, all the learners in basic education in KZN and then moving on to the provinces. And that is the nature of the intervention. We are not looking necessarily at the financial outcomes. We're looking at the number of learners, the extent of improvement in learning and teaching, and also administrative administration of those areas there. Moving into there are other elements to the project on page 40. Centec was allocated some money in around 2008 to buy access into the East Africa international cable system, Easy Cable, which in fact reduces in fact the cost of providing the end-to-end service quite significantly, and we are pursuing that now in earnest and continuing to work with both the provincial and local government structures in the execution of this project. And that's not also. Moving forward on page 41, it's what I've just said earlier, that KZN will be, it was agreed that KZN can be used to build, and then whatever lessons learned will be then applied to the rest of the country and other provinces. We have recently had some issues have arisen between, in this case, the National Treasury and the Department of Communications. What has happened is that the National Treasury has, I think, has acknowledged the new plan, the new business plan that Centec submitted for this project quite positively. But National Treasury has also expressed directly to, written us a letter noting that we should not use money that has been allocated until such time that the Department of Communications has met certain conditions. And one critical condition is the development of a consolidated national broadband plan to be submitted to Treasury. So we're in a little bit of a situation where we are ready to roll out after having done the extensive design work, but we can't physically because the issue between the National Treasury and the Department of Communications. The department has asked us to make some inputs which we have made in the strategy document. The document should be ready for submission between the DOC and National Treasury by the end of this month. And hopefully before the end of the calendar year, that bottleneck should be then cleared for us to continue with this initiative. And then I will chairperson and chairperson allow the CFO to then complete the rest of the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will take the committee through the financial highlights of CENTEC for the first half of the year, which ended 30 September 2011. On slide 44, from a revenue perspective, the year-to-date actual performance for CENTEC was 400 million against our budget of 412 million. We were 3% under the budget, which is an equivalent of 12 million in terms of our revenue target. And that underperformance is mainly attributed to the FM radio being 4 million below budget, and also shortwave radio being 5 million below budget, and also VSAT being 1.7 million below budget. Also, there was a SABC discount which was not factored in when the budget was made. SABC has got a 2% sales discount, and when the budget was done, that 2% was not taken into account. As a result, we had the budget being 2% overstated in terms of the revenue that was receivable from SABC. However, when we compare our year-to-date actual performance with the same period last year, that is the period ended in September 2010, you note that our revenue grew by 2%, which is about 6 million when we compare it to the same period last year. If I move on to page 45, looking at operating expenditure side from CENTEC, our operating expenditure was 16% below budget, or an equivalent of 55 million. The main reason for that 55 million is mainly related to the operations maintenance cost, which was 47% or 13 million below budget. And as the CEO has indicated earlier on that, at some stage, the board took a decision to suspend certain activities relating to supply chain in order to make sure that supply chain is beefed up to comply with the best practice in the market. As a result, there were delays in terms of supply chain, and as a result, we've got that underperformance under operations maintenance cost. Also, our personal cost was 16 million or 11% below budget, mainly relating to the vacant post, which were budgeted for, but they were not filled. As a result, we had that variance of 16 million. Also, we had a variance of about 32%, which is an equivalent of 13 million, which is mainly related to depreciation, and depreciation being a non-cash item. The true cash variance would not be 55 million, it would be 42 million if you were to take into account that depreciation is a non-cash item. Also, there were also costs which were relating to the set cost as a result of the shortfall in revenue target for VSET. As a result, the corresponding variable cost also, there was underperformance there. Honorable Chair, I'll move to page 46, which will give you the panoramic view of financial performance of CENTEC, being the statement of comprehensive income, which shows you quarter one and quarter two, and then show you the combined, which is under the column that is shaded gray, which is saying year-to-date result. You've got the actual there, which is compared against the budget, and then the variance against the budget, the revenue that being the actual revenue being 400 million against the budget of 412, showing that 3% which I talked about earlier on. So is the operating expenditure being budgeted at 338 million and the actual expenditure being 253 million, showing that variance of 3% about earlier on. The overall performance, which when we look at the profit after tax for the 6 month period, we achieve a 97 million actual profit after tax compared to our budget, which was 81 million. So we were 19% above in terms of our profit after tax. Honorable Chair, I'll move to page 47. Which will show us the balance sheet for Centec or the financial position of Centec as at 30 September 2011. If you look at our current asset, as at 30 September 2011, we had our current asset sitting at about 1.4 billion, our non-current asset sitting at about 689 million, with overall total asset sitting at 2 billion. If you look at our liabilities and capital reserves, our capital and reserves sitting at 843 million, capital and reserves being the measure of the extent to which your asset exceeds your liabilities, showing your liquidity and your solvency. Centec, you can conclude that Centec is solvent. Our current liabilities sitting at 991 million, and our non-current liabilities sitting at 283 million, with overall total liabilities plus capital and reserve sitting at 2 billion. If I move to page 48, Honorable Chair, which is a statement of cash flow, which is showing our cash in the business. We had 159 million, which is cash flow from operating activities, and we expended about 48 million cash from investing activities, and we had 81 million, which is cash from financing activities. With our overall cash position at 30 September 2011 sitting at about 1.3 billion. And that cash mainly being made up of about 860 million being what we call restricted cash. That is cash which is relating to a specific project. We can only use that cash for those specific projects and nothing else. And also cash of about 440 million, which is cash which is relating to operations for the business. That is the cash that could be used for the day-to-day running of the business. And that is the end of the financial highlight for Centec as at September 2011. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Before we can take questions, there's fresh tea outside. If maybe members and Centec can grab tea one by one, fresh tea. You know, we don't want just not to spend your... You must just grab tea and come in. And then I have noted Honorable Sibande, Honorable Dibie, Honorable Mlenzana, Honorable Groenewald. In that order, but can we just grab tea, please?
Thank you. We start?
Yes,
okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I would also like to thank the Centec maybe to give us this report, but nevertheless, there will be questions. Mama, I would be concerned. You see, during the son of President Zuma, in the State of Nation Address for 2010, the President noted that vital ICT project that should benefit from the country's 787 billion rands Infrastructure Development Investment. That was the money which was given to investment for nearly two things, categories, which is digital and broadcasting, and the other one was the reduction of telecommunication cost. Therefore, you see, I'll be happy out of the statement which you're giving us. Tell us exactly the money which we have spent or provide us information or progress about in rolling out the digital infrastructure and transmitters and financial implication. You know, why I'm raising that, Madam Chairperson, on page 27 in your presentation, you raise some of the outstanding issues, while at the same time, I think you do have deadlines. I'll put an example. You do have a deadline of 2011. Official wanted to come with something to 2015. Not to remember countries will allow other countries and the like. But with that one, I've got two questions. Number one question, does Suntech have adequate monitoring system in place to prevent illegal usage of signals and frequencies? Because it doesn't have to just dish out while we don't have measurements to prevent. And what is worrying me in that regard as well, ma'am, with that from the amount which is provided by the president. On page 27, which is linking with this information, you raise some of the outstanding issues while there is a deadline. Some outstanding issues I'm subject for correction, that like a BDM, you dependent on the policy review. And also you do have, I'll read the DTs. DDT, Migration Regulations Review, also it's a process itself. And then the financial transmission parameters for broadcasters, it's a process itself. And then also STB control for government subsidized setup boxes, it's a process. And then also community television broadcasters coverage requirements. That one would be a problem. I'll come with the question again. Rules of operations, PSI/SI management. Also, some of the things are processed. Why do you give yourself that? Is it possible to meet that deadline? Why do you still have outstanding things? And then my main concern, Chairperson, in one of the slides where you were showing where you're going to launch the project, I'm a little bit concerned, very, very concerned. You know why I'm concerned? You know, in the previous rules, we were divided by apartheid, divided by everything. And why do you allow also institutions to confine us in such things? If you look at that map, I may be semi-blind, but you can see your target. You target the very same developed areas. What problems do you have, the areas which are not developed? You see, let me give you an example. If you go to Limpopo is very sensitive, if you're not careful, very sensitive, because the previous government has divided it in racial groups, that our vendor, our what. But if you focus on that one, you must balance that province. But you can check at your own presentation, you start somewhere where it's very developed. And it raises eyebrows as well as Northern Cape. You go somewhere in Northern Cape. I think I assume Northern Cape is among of the biggest province. But we have employed only 6 people. Only 6. That tells you your concentration. You operate like the olden one. And also, which is worrying, Madam Chair, somewhere about the issue of the suspended staff or people who have been expelled, whatever might be. If you can tell us about the development, what is happening, whether they have been charged, if they were charged, including financial implication. You know why I'm raising it, Chairperson? It is alleged that in some of the entities and the departments,
in terms of our suspension. For an example, I can suspend Onel without following the proper procedures. At the end, to allow Onel to sue the state. So if you can update us about the development. Last one, in your presentation, you've raised an issue about Centec, about this thing of roll out of switch on page 29. This lower power FM television station areas where such coverage did not exist before. It's worrying me. You know why? 2 days ago in the Northern Cape, Ku and the Kwe, they've just recently launched a radio station after how long we have been in power. And I don't think that station is covering the entire area. And we depend on you as Centec, who are having powers to go and help with 123. We are from Mpumalanga. It is an embarrassment. The way we were so divided into categories, like in cages. If you are in former Gwangwane, you can't catch us in the bed. Ikwikwiz. If you are in former Gwangwane, if you are in Kwik vice versa, again, it is worse. If you go towards the border of Mbuzini, they can't catch Igwala Gwala. They are forced to listen to either Mozambique or Swaziland. So, to me, when you bring such a presentation, it's better to do your research thoroughly. Because what I'm scared of, we are public figures and you must empower us in order when we go back to home, we are able to respond in such questions. This thing goes back, Madam Chairperson, that I wanted to find out the deadline of when are these areas going to cover. Last one, do you still remember in Limpopo, in Sekunkun, in that hotel where we were sleeping? I can't remember the name of the area where we were sleeping in Limpopo while we were doing Sekukuni. Right in Sekukuni. Sekukuni is a very isolated area. It's very difficult for them to access TV in some areas. In some areas, it's very difficult to access even phones. Phones. We were there as members of parliament, but it wasn't an embarrassment for us because we can't help. When they saw us, black and white, they were crying to us. Last one is the issue of Mpumalanga, the rolling out of your programs for the school, because I think Mpumalanga was one of your target schools. If you can maybe tell us exactly how many schools were covered, because I believe that some of the information is to empower schools in terms of the economy of this country, and I won't go in deep details, but how many schools, because what I'm scared of in Mpumalanga, what they normally do, they go to Nelspruit and then assume that they finish Mpumalanga. While we do have all these places which in the former Gwandebele, so going to Murutile and the like, and what other places go to Piet Retief and go to what? Once they go to Middle Witbank and Secunda and Nelspruit, they finish. That's a mistake. That's not Mpumalanga. I'll end there. Maybe if given a chance, I'll come again. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think I want to first appreciate the fact that you ultimately got to Papadau in the Western Cape, but there is also another area which I want to bring under your attention, which is Rietpoort, Mooiplaas. It is on the borders of the Western Cape and the Northern Cape, on your N7 going to Springbok. Chairperson, mine is only three questions for clarity. And the first one deals with the half-year financial report. The accounting officer says that they were operating with a below budget of 3% and has an actual should I use the word profit, the term of 2%. I just want to understand how does you operate with a below budget and then in the same time showing profit. Is it profit out of your tariff? Where does your profit come from? Because you also raise the fact that on your cost relating to VSAT, the revenue, as well as out of the underperformance. Now, your underperformance has to deal with your procurement issues. So that when you rectify or when you arrested your procurement issues, they then escalate the 3%. So which means your actual problem was indeed in your procurement department. Is that what you're saying? Because I want to see where is the reflection coming from of the revenue, of the profit which you had while operating in a, I don't want to use this term, of under budget. The second question is the question of the CEO says that there is an 8% outside of society who don't get coverage, and from the 92% which we claimed, it is only confirmed that SABC 2 is giving the coverage. So which means that the 90% could also be influenced if you had to take the two other channels. And in some of the areas, because we travel a lot in the NCLT, even your SABC 2 are so weak, I couldn't believe that we call that an access to the channel. Because of how the existing place in the rural areas. The other issue for me it seems to me that the department is struggling to filling up critical vacancies, very strategic vacancies. Because if you look in terms of your posts, people are acting for 14 months, which is really extremely long. And those which are really your critical vacancies, which will assist your organization in terms of dealing with your mandate. I think we need more some explanation. Why is it a fact that you have such critical positions not filled for almost 2 years? And I think I'm just concerned about that one. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Acting Chairperson and CEO. My question, Chairperson, would demand some kind of memory, if I can so say, because this is not the first time that we are with Centec. There was the first one, for instance, on relations, would be how are your relations with POC and FABC. And asking this question, Chairperson, with the understanding of the previous response. The second one is your relations with Japan. Yeah, now the CEO is beginning now. this select committee sometime this year, I
mean, not last year, but round about that time, we were in Japan. I'm not going to tell you what is it that we were lobbied for, but Sentech was mentioned. So, I've listened carefully. I received the document yesterday, went through it, couldn't say anything. I listened today, but nothing. On your side sharing, where you are talking constraints, there's a lukewarm, I'm putting now my own words, it's not as such. It just started now. I cannot go to Trevorton. But there's a lukewarm kind of a relationship between yourself and Watercom. An agreement which you cannot define it as definitely and sealed agreement, but there is a relationship between yourself and Watercom, whereas there is nothing with others. Can you talk more on that? This one would go to the CEO. CEO, do you have a turnaround plan for Zendek? Also, I'm asking this because I can link it, this question, to the ills we all know. Maybe put the other way around, linking to what the CFO was presenting. One would ask, is Zendek Chairperson beginning to recuperate from the ills? Because we know where you come from. Now we don't have to begin to pretend as if we do not know. But ours would be to check as to, are you trying to swim out, or are you continuing thinking? The last one, because I deliberately do not want to bombard. There's time when we will come back here, when we will have questions, or we will go there. When you will have studied and understood us, then we will go. The Monday knows. We will go there and meet you. What are your collaboration plans, if there are any, with Southern Water? I heard you talking of East Africa, and I know that the Department of Communication said to us, if you remember, Japan, as the department, they have derived interest by virtue of South Africa being at the center of turning the things around in that new country. And I doubt now if the department would be interested outside Zendek. It would then go back to your then Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will be very short today. I just want to know, you mentioned about the monitoring system, and you explained what is busy happening in court with Botswana at this stage. But do you have any other monitoring systems in place in the country for maybe if there's an illegal usage from our own people in the public who mismanage the whole system? If you can just give us more information about that. And then you also mentioned about the policies, the BDM policy review, and then I want also to know what other policies do you have in place, and is there any other policies you are busy with, what is in a reviewing process at this stage, because I think the policy is playing a big role in the whole organization. If your policy is not in place, we can have trouble. So if you can just give us more information about that.
And then that is basically an ordinary question. I want to know, are there enough decoders available at this stage in South Africa? And I also want to know, from which country are you imported these decoders, and what is do not even know what is an Afrikaans. I'm stuck now. The transmitters as well, from where are we getting the transmitters? You've also mentioned that we have had enough skills in South Africa to do everything for us here, but I'm quite sure there are still foreigners who are also involved in some of our projects in South Africa as well, and how many, and when they finished with their jobs here, are they going back to their countries, or are they staying in South Africa? So the other question I will come back to. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. On page 25, maybe if you can elaborate more on the coverage on both DTT and DTH, especially on the Northern Cape. You know, I know I had, there's an area, I can't remember the name very well, in the Northern Cape, whereby people don't have any coverage. You know, they whether telephone, TVs, they, you know, they live on their own there. So if maybe you can elaborate more, especially linking the question to the member who was talking about the rural area, because definitely we are actually putting these services in the developed areas, and we forget about the rural areas. We are here as members. We are from the rural areas. You know, you go from Cape Town, you go to Nkomas, you go to very far, and you are a member of parliament, but you can't, when you switch your TV on, you can't. I'm happy that Patrice Mashile is now with you, Centec, because I think he will be able to assist, you know, about the information that this committee was sharing with him when he was with the CAS. And what I want the Centec also to do, to say you don't have to sit there and wait for the select committee to invite you to come here. You must communicate with us, because we are, you know, we are doing oversight. You are doing the implementation of service delivery. So by communicating with us, you will be able actually to, at the end of the day, to make the communities happy, so that when you enter the rural area, Emangweni, I don't know whether you are aware of Emangweni, is the deep rural also of Mpumalanga. When you enter Vembe in Limpopo, when we talk of Limpopo, we don't talk of Polokwa. We talk of the rural area whereby, you know, sometimes you say, I wish these 5 years can be extended so that I give service to the people. I make someone like Centec aware of the areas that really need development. So you must also tell us, as this committee, what is it that you need from us to really assist you to make progress? also the other one, like for example, you were talking about the policy. If you look at the faces, they are mostly new, honorable members. They are new. Hence, you were putting the question saying, are you swimming out or are you sinking? So you must tell us what we are representing provinces, and we are willing to work hand in hand with you. And there was an issue, I'm not whether sure you are aware of it, of the screamer issue. If you can tell us, I mean, that is the wireless internet service that is using Sentex frequency illegally. If you can give us a progress on that, on and how much money was lost as a result of screamer issue. And also my wireless. It actually cost Sentex 100 million to gain 5,000 customers. And Sentex has apparently stopped the my wireless project. But what does Sentex have to say? What do you have to say about this failed project? How much money was lost due to this failure? Some of these questions were not in your in your presentation, but because we are aware, we want to know about those. And the municipalities. On page 30, you know, when you present to us, if you tell us we are working with these municipalities, if you mention them, where you have challenges, I think as members, we can also be able to sit down or together with you and call also the municipalities here so that we are able to assist in making sure that the municipalities are working hand in hand with you. And also this committee deals with ESCO. We are the Select Committee on Labor and Public Enterprises, where you maybe encounter a problem with ESCOM, we are able as this committee to communicate and say, this is the process that Sentex is taking now, what is the problem? And the stakeholders, you mentioned the stakeholders that were, I think it's in KZN, yes, KwaZulu-Natal was identified by stakeholders. If you can just...
It says by all stakeholders.
It's page 35. By all stakeholders as a benchmark region for rollout. Can you mention the stakeholders for us so that we are aware? And then if you hold these workshops, I think it's really important that, like I said, there must be that two-way, the parliamentary liaison. I think it's important that you communicate with the secretary of the committee so that when the workshop is going to be held in Mpumalanga or in the Eastern Cape, you send that information. When we don't have time to go, all of us, the member in that particular province can attend, you see, can attend so that the community also can see that these people are really working hand in hand with our public reps. I think if we go to page, old age, to page 39, maybe also on this one, if you can, if you can, Umzinyathi. You know, last week we were in
what was it? Engut. Engut. We were there. You know, there are clinics that we visited, there are police stations that we visited. So if when you present this, if you can say in Engut, we deal with this clinic, what, you must mention so that when members are on constituency, they can go straight to those areas. So if you say schools, 242 schools, we don't know which schools are those. So you must be specific to say this particular school, Centec has done this. And the last one from me is, you know, we've got the youth that has passed matric, that has got science and math. Maybe if you can explain to us whether you do have a project of interns, of maybe making sure that you give back to the communities as Centec, so that even if you don't employ them, but train them so that there is a job creation in future. And as Centec, maybe tell us how many jobs have you created. Thank you. Over to you. We will come back if time allows us. Thank you.
Over to you, acting chair.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, thank you very much for the questions from the provider answers, and if you are not able to, then provide some of the information thereafter. Some of the information is there, which is that we haven't been able to what we'll note the ones that will come back to you. If I may start, and I just want to deal with the general issue around universal access. And what it means to us. When we developed the corporate plan, I mean, the first thing I think is an acknowledgement that indeed we are quite new. Mm-hmm. We are in the process of turning around Centec. Honourable Member, Centec has turned. I joined in November last year, and as I was dealing with my later board members during the process, I saw an article in the papers that said Centec to run out of cash by November, and that was last year, that was in 2010. I think that article came out around probably July, August or so. Centec to run out of cash. And the industry is very, very small. Some of the people who work for the broadcasters are people that, you know, we grew up with in the industry. And what they did about that, in fact, they started, particularly the radio broadcasters, the smaller ones, they started creating thoughts of their own Centec, an alternative signal distributor. Clearly the message that was sent out there was that this SOE was not able to, I mean, unless there was shareholder intervention or something, would not be able to fulfill its mandate moving forward, and they were making plans. In fact, if one looked at the annual report of the financial year 2009-2010, that issue was raised by the board in the form of an emphasis of matter, saying that unless there is no evidence on the basis of the annual report that Centec was generating enough cash to be able to sustain itself without shareholder intervention on operating costs. Just as a statement that about the turnaround, that in the new annual report that we just did for the past financial year, that emphasis was removed, and the auditors acknowledged that we were able to generate enough cash and retain enough cash to be able to sustain our operations, but not only do that, but also fund expansions in the context of universal services. So from a financial point of view, I think the interventions that started in April of 2010 have worked, and we are quite sustainable. And that is why we do spend some time on the financials and maybe some the language that we use. We talk about the balance sheet, we talk about profit and so on. It is not intended to talk about something as if it's a private entity. It is to give comfort to the shareholder, to honorable members in Parliament in general, and to people out there who depend on Centec for their public services, that we are a sustainable entity that is able to sustain its public service mandate. And that is the context under which we're able to do that. An indication of that is last year, around this time, Centec was budgeted to be running out of cash, and right now we're talking about cash from operations of a couple of hundreds of millions that we are now going to implement in public services. And I'll give an example of that in radio, because radio is a particular pain point for us. About 2 weeks ago, we sat at the technology committee, and we are going for a board strategy session within a week, where one of the items there is incorporation. We've asked the board to incorporate the what we call FM radio expansion as a new flexi project moving forward. It is a flexi project that is not called for by the department, is not called for by the SABC. It is called for by us in the context of our new mission statement and the concerns that you are raising. And I'll just give you examples of the work that you have done and that is shocking. When you talk about coverage based on the old borders and the old restrictions, when you see it, as we'll show now, it actually tells a different story. We've taken that, we've published that, we've shown it around, and then we've taken about the 3-year program of solving that problem, mostly using our own generators and our cash. Before I start, I just want to reflect again on the mission statement as incorporated, our purpose statement as incorporated in our new corporate plan. If one looked at the corporate plan of Centec in 2009-2010, you would have seen a mission statement that talks about technology, that talks about business, and there's no mention of universal access. We've done a new mission statement, which unfortunately we didn't put here, and I'll just reiterate. It is to enable affordable universal access in the context of, in the socio-political context of the country as a developmental state. Every one of those words means something. Enablement means something. It means that we are going to make sure we are not going to compete with the market. We are not going to repeat the mistakes of Malawi. We are an SOE that enables everybody, be it SABC, be it S702, or be it Ndambani FM that we just launched yesterday, or be it any other community broadcaster. Then
who did not know?
We have taken note of that. We have certainly taken note of that. And I'll just look, I'll just point to you about the low power project, because you actually have a detailed list of the sites and what we're doing and so on and so forth. So it's enabling those public services. We right now, in 1994, there were no community radio broadcasters to talk about. It was the Triple Inquiry in particular called for the establishment of community broadcasters as a way of diversifying and entrenching democracy. We have seen a lot of growth of community broadcasters. Now there are in excess of 100 community radio broadcasters of the country. Most of them are on the Centec network. We know that prior to the intervention of the people here, there was very little support given by Centec to community radio broadcasters. We have changed that, and I hope that when you go on the visit, we would like to accompany you so that we can also get the issues as they come in, because we do act on them once we get those issues. The relationship between SENTEC and the community broadcasters has improved quite substantially, but there is a lot to do. We are providing them not only with support. I mean, the community broadcaster finds it very difficult, typically, to have a line to ICASA on, you know, changing the frequency plans, changing service coverage areas, and so on and so forth. We have put now in our operation a direct line from the regional manager close to the community broadcaster to somebody in our regulatory division that is able to, and our technical teams also, that are able to take the issues on the ground directly, and then we can deal with the customer. And we've had a lot of successes on some of the interventions, but there's a lot of work to be done. Enablement is a key word. Affordability is one. Universal access is another. And understanding the context under which we are operating in this environment right now. Context that you're talking about, and honorable members, about attention to the needs of people in the rural areas in particular. Needs of people who are underserviced, and underserviced in particular, rural underserviced. Then we also looked at the issue of the universal access in the context of diversity of radio services. We talked about the 2.9 quite. We've noted that probably the last time, I mean, I haven't had it since I came to SENTEC until we took the 2.9 quite report and made all the managers read it and reflect on it. I haven't had anybody talk about the objectives and the targets that were set in there. As I said, that one of the targets set in there was that if I want to listen to Ukhozi 90% of the time in 1995, 90% of the time anywhere in the country, I should be able to have Ukhozi. As we have it right now, if you can look at the screen, honorable members, that is the coverage of Ukhozi that we have right now in the country. There is no other place other than what we have in Gauteng, part of Limpopo, and KZN, where Ukhozi is. By the way, that is about the 6 million listeners, and it's the highest number of listeners. We said the project to now implement the targets of getting Ukhozi across the country, it's very long-term process, requiring money and so on and so forth. But we are going to start with it at SENTEC. We are going to go to SABC and say, we share a public service mandate around diversity. We are going to do this thing. And we'll deal with SABC at some point. I think I think we'll talk about the relationship with SABC, and I do understand the context of that. Part of it is having the SABC ready in mind and also operationally to be able to work with us on this kind of public service interventions. But we started to engage with them. The first part of this intervention, for example, something that the board will be acknowledging is a possibility now of extending Ukhozi to that type of person there, where now Ukhozi can go into Mpumalanga, Ukhozi can go into Free State, Ukhozi can go into Northwest, Ukhozi can go into PE and East London without any problem. That's the first point in starting to break those boundaries. Then we say Mhlobo is the same thing in the Free State, in Mpumalanga, and so on. We say Thobela, we start bringing Thobela down. In fact, this is what we've actually said is that we now have, as an example of the specific intervention, Thobela in East London, Thobela in PE, just to show that there is no reason why it should just only be, even that expansion should just only be in the northern part of the country. We should have Thobela in Kimberley, there's enough frequencies there to be able to do that. Because what we try to do there is first break the psychology of the old mind, and then we can get have the same type of focus on doing this thing. Noting that there is, in general, in the urban areas, in Cape Town, in Durban, there are frequency issues. Most of the time, there are no available frequencies for some of the expansions. But we say that in most of the country, we should be able to do that. So we've done this design for Mercedes, Mungana, Lonene, Palapala, and all the services. Again, this is an initiative coming from SENTEC on its own. And within the context of the new plan. And we, it's a three-year program. It's not, it's something that should have been done in the 90s. We're starting it now, and we'll just keep informing the honorable members what every program is doing. And the board is deliberating on this proposal, has been passed by the technology committee of the board already to be ratified moving forward. And then with respect to, again, covering the general issue of coverage of rural areas, we have noted, yes, that there is a large number. I mean, the 8% is quite a substantial number of people. Even a minimum calculation tells us about 5 million people or so that we're saying do not have access to SABC 1, 2, or 3. And we're talking about 5 million and more people who just have SABC 2. And it's not the right thing. I mean, this thing, again, should have been sorted out or dealt with a long time ago. Yeah. So what we have is, again, we'll share this schedule and as updated. These are all the areas that we have launched the Low Power Project at. And in particular, recently, we, as you mentioned, that we had Wuppertal, and then we're at Francesas last week, and then we are going to be in Mpumalanga on the 25th of November. The place. No, not confirmed. Actually, yeah, because it hasn't been confirmed through the ministry. That was a target date for launching those sites. But the proactive engagement with the senior committee has been noted, and certainly we will. This information will be in your domain for engagement, so that we have opportunity to we can participate in this together. What we're trying to show here is that we do have a list of the places that we are going to implement or intend to implement based on the fact that surveys have been done about NIP, and we can always build the list together with the SABC, again based on different inputs. We are not necessarily the owners; we are SOEs, mm-hmm. and we do respond to. Our mandates coming from the DOC and coming from the governance structure around us. This is a list that we have prepared with SABC based on surveys, and there will probably be more engagement on those.
I'm happy to hear that because Mr. Cloud, he actually, committed that from the day we met with them, that definitely they are going to communicate with this committee. They were not aware, actually, before that, provinces are so important, and that we as the select committee, we are the National Council of Provinces, the Select Committee on Labor and Public Enterprises. You and SABC, you should actually communicate more than.
So we'll share the information and get guidance about how to for further make this thing maximize the impact of this initiative to the country. If you look at we have shown the site owners, I think I'll jump to that question about the relationship with Vodacom. We've shown the site owners, and you are correct that most of the engagements initially for sites that have been launched were the engagements with Vodacom. In fact, when I initially reviewed this project, I found that people were fixated on Vodacom, and they were not thinking about other opportunities. They were not thinking about Telkom in particular, they were not thinking about other entities. So in fact, we have broken that bond in the minds of people to say we will go and find facilities to implement this as quickly as possible from whoever has those facilities when outside of any kind of special relationship. When we go there as Centec and SABC, we are really not asking for, and also the mindset initially with Vodacom was, Vodacom, do us a favor. Give us this site for free, because, and look at it as this initiative, as a CS community social initiative on your side. We said, that's not how we treat people. We have a responsibility of going to Vodacom and saying, make that site available on normal terms. It is our responsibility to pay. We are not asking for a favor, because we, Centec and SABC, have an obligation. The SABC is the one who pays Centec, who gets the money from advertisers, who gets the money from license fee payers, who gets the money sometimes from government. And then the chain goes into paying for the signal distribution. And nowhere in that model, in our mandate, have we been told to go and ask for favors from operators in the execution of public service mandate. So we cut that language of favors. And then we said, then moving forward, we are going to approach Telkom, and I've written the letter to both the CEO of Telkom, the CEO of Vodacom. The letter to the CEO of MTN is being prepared because we're specifying the executive size that we would like, and the letter to the CEO of the company that manages the former CLC sites has also been dispatched. We've cleared with the SABC that if there are CSI, the CSI comes in, it will be done under different agreements, not the formal agreement. Because then it speeds up things. Then Vodacom sees us as somebody who... Then we can use other regulatory tools. If Vodacom or any of the operators don't give us access to site, and they can, that means it's technical and financially viable for them. If we approach them formally as equals, and they refuse to give us access, then the regulator has given the industry tools to be able to manage situations like that. And I think that has that has helped. I mean, Vodacom has started to move. Telkom has started to move. Recently, we got some additional sites from Telkom with things that were stuck for quite a number of months before that. Then going to the rest of the specific questions, the DTT spend on page 26 of the presentation, there's an indication there of what the intention was to spend in this financial year. With budgeted to spend 355 million, and that money was available. We asked for an additional 11 million in order to be able to complete the project. And actually that money was made available because we drew it out of the interest that was set there. So the intention was to spend 366 million or even make commitments for that. The bulk of that would have been from the transmitters, which is just over 100 million. And then the antennas, which would have been another 60 million, and then some equipment that sits in the main network, about 30 million. We will be able to make commitments on at least the transmitters this financial year. We may not be able to pass the cash, but we'll be able to make the commitments. I mean, I think the important thing for us is that we're able to do that while at the same time knowing that what we've done in terms of supply chain is thin and is as is expected from us as an SOE. So commitment will be made. The effect on the economy will be probably felt then in the next financial year, because that's when they will. Okay. Thank you. Okay. The effect of that commitment will then be felt in the next financial year. What we've done is, one of the problems that Centec had, and I'm not sure to what extent this issue was out in the open. In Centec, and this is where none of them people here were there. I mean, this is prior to April of 2010. In Centec's procurement documents, one would find there was a small line there around the rules of procurement as applied to international companies. what that line said was that international companies are exempt. Now this is Centec saying that international companies are exempt from requirements around local participation, in particular black economic empowerment obligations and expectations. And that instead of doing so, they were allowed by Centec to donate 1%, 2% into a Centec CSI fund. What that meant was that, in fact, in most throughout the year, Centec, as it was buying from international companies, would buy direct and would not involve any of the local companies. Therefore, one can then imagine that there was very little said. The money that was being spent on this project, which was mostly government money, direct public funding, capital funding, would then go out to those international companies in terms of support. If you needed support, then you'd have to call somebody from any country to come and provide that. We have stopped that. We have made sure that everybody complies. In fact, in the arrangement that we just had in upgrading the transmitters, which were bought under the old regime, when we did the upgrade, we said, you are the owners of the equipment, so you are the ones that will be upgrading the equipment. However, there are requirements. There's legislation, there's regulation, and you have to comply with those. And you have to comply and make sure that you have local partners, make sure that they are skills transfer, and we even insisted on a right to monitor the progress of skills transfers, which was very uncomfortable for the local partner, but we insisted in there, and the contract was not signed, has a clause that allows us to be able to look at the involvement of local entities in there. Now that is, in my records of Centec, it is certainly a theft, and we will continue doing that and making sure that there is local participation. And in particular, that drives skills development and that drives sustainable job creation. The kind of project that we're doing are project-based. So if one is not careful, you'll find that you will have people doing some jobs and then afterwards there's nothing to do. So one is actually to do job creation on the back of skills development so that you create sustainability. We have spent much, much less than 355 up until now and committed much less, but we'll certainly be able to commit the bulk of the money that we set out for ourselves. And I think what we can later on, I mean, there's a program that the board is undertaking right now to further accelerate and provide support in accelerating the DDT project. And I think once the board has finished with that program, we should be able to provide definitive program of the spend moving forward in terms of the budget that has been given. The other issue I think that was common from our honourable members was on the outstanding issues around policy and regulation and so on. For the most part, in fact, all of these issues are issues within the industry, within the environment that we work with. What it means is that we can actually go and meet our obligations in terms of the readiness of the network. And the only thing that can make, I mean, there would have to be catastrophic, I mean, there have to be major changes to the policy or regulation for us to be able not to achieve our objectives. And because we've got inside the policy, the DOC has already released the policy. The industry has already given its responses. So we know what the issues are that are contentious. And none of those have prevented us from being able to meet our rollout obligations. The standard issue is that it is not contentious, it's included. The deadline is in the new draft review draft policy, it's not contentious. The issue of set-top box control via encryption is a contentious issue and is included in policy. But it, as a customer, it has to be an issue of worry for everybody, because at the end of the day, the project will be successful to the extent that the analog signal is switched off and everybody is watching television on the digital television with their set-top boxes and their old TVs or new TVs for the country. And we are using the additional spectrum for other purposes. So it's an issue of concern for everybody that the set-top box control has been specified in the draft policy to be through encryption. We have made our contribution to minister the AGM that we have in Mesa Bariatri. We provided a quite a detailed response on how this issue can be averted. In the interest of the project, in the interest of the industrial policy, the trade policy, and so on and so forth. We'll continue pushing for the set-top box control. I think it's almost at a point where it's solvable. And the minute that gets solved, then the set-top box specification will be finalized, then the manufacturing process can start.
I'm happy if you can try and, wrap up, because I think members have other meetings, you saw one have just left. The issues that you haven't responded to, then we will request you to send them to us so that we will respond to you. But for now, you can have like 10 minutes up, and then just to wrap up so that we finalize members the minutes before you leave to your other meetings. We'll lobby for the NCOP to have more members than the Patriots when you are in your community meetings. But you can continue.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. We've already talked about the issue of coverage, universal coverage, and how we're trying to approach it in a broader sense. So I won't touch those things further. And the issue that was a different one is the nature of the relationship between the DOC and SABC. As with many relationships in entities that are undergoing transformation, there's always room for improvement in all the relationships. There is room for improvement at a strategic level. And strategic, I mean, in the understanding of our public service mandate in the context and the targets, in the understanding of the roles of the individual entities, and the roles of the governance structures around the individual entities. I must say that the Minister Pule has, with the board has met, and she was very clear and foresight on her expectations, particularly about how she expects a Centec to be proactive and engaging with the office in some of these matters. And I think all of this is for the good of our money. The relationship with the SABC is not easy right now, just based on the instability within the SABC. It's probably strongest in the low power project, because we're dealing with something that is visible, something that the people can see, and within the SABC is a special project. But when you start talking about the FM expansion, as we discussed, the diversity of FM radio, now you need to have to deal with the SABC at a strategic level. And I think we are not able to get to that level. And actually talk about how public broadcasting can grow and change and meet the obligations as set, for example, in the 1995 Triple Inquiry. I think that's one of the items that the board will be sitting at the strategy session that will be on the 7th and the 4th. That will be looking at how do we deal with SABC when it's unstable. How do we manage that instability? Because it will not work for our joint public service obligations for an unstable SABC then to make it impossible for us to be able to function. because then we all fail in that respect. So I think the challenge will be on us as a board to look at how to manage that instability as a way of not, of doing of normal risk management. But the SMC, I think, however, they have really seen a different approach to how we approach public service. If I say how we approach ourselves as a company, we no longer talk about market share to them. We no longer talk about profit margin. We talk about how many more people are covered. Where are people covered? Our language to them has changed completely. We offer them solutions. We don't sit there and say, SABC, you are a customer. So if you don't say, go there, we won't propose, we'll sit and wait for you as a customer. We go this map that you've shown in here. We take them. I've already given those maps to the SABC. Say, this is what you want to do, and this is why, and we can draw from all the founding documents of the broadcast industry. It's really getting a handle at EXCO level and board level at SABC that we probably need to do a little bit more. On the issue of Japan, I think it's quite an important issue and a strategic issue to clear so that when honorable members go again in other places, you're quite comfortable about that we've moved on from this particular. At some point in 2000 and... financial 2010-2011 and probably before that, there was a discussion on the DTT standards where much as there seemed to have been an agreement, a cabinet decision on the DVB-T as a standard, the so-called European standard. There were also other discussions about ISDB-T, which is then the Japanese standard that had been adopted by, in particular, Brazil and a couple of other countries around the world. CENTEC was then asked, it was in 2010, to assist policymakers in decision-making by doing tests on the ISDB-T standard to look at its merits as claimed by its designers against the standard. At the point, there was also DVB-T2, which was being considered, or the next generation of either standards, definitely for the benefit of everybody, because then you have a lot more capacity. So CENTEC did some tests on behalf of policymakers on ISDB-T, submitted the tests, and that was really the only relationship that CENTEC ever had with Japan in the context of this. And that was at a technical level in testing the standards. A transmitter was put, it was put in there, measurements were done, and technical reports were produced and available on that regard. As we said that, in January 2011, Minister Pariyatta announced the cabinet decision of around late November that the country had adopted the DVB-T2 as a national standard, and that's what we were using moving forward. And in that regard in particular, there is no reason whatsoever for any kind of discussion to be happening with Japan as a country on any issue of standards. Beyond that, I'm not aware of any other discussions with Japan. Botswana, the monitoring systems. I think we if we can maybe offer any other discussion on Botswana in a different way, just to be able to manage the judicial process in court. And anything that we say can be construed in different ways. In particular, vacancies. We are filling vacancies. We have to have the people who not only understand the industry but have a keen sense of public service at a high level. I think we've been successful. We've done a lot of work. I mean, some of the old vacancies have been filled, and we've picked up a lot of time in filling those vacancies that we have. Honourable members, I think the rest of them will be able to answer in a different way. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think the other one, the crucial one, is the first question that was asked by Honorable Sibande on the issue of the people the people who were working in Suntec who were suspended. If you can quickly touch on that, for those that you didn't answer, you will send us the request, but we will remind you through the secretary. Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. We have had a number of disciplinary cases related to fruitless and wasteful expenditure and also irregular expenditures. On fruitless and wasteful expenditure, Centec, when the board came, one of the things that they realized was the Centec had not been meeting its obligations on license fees to CASA. That's a normal obligation. And if we don't do that, we're actually making it impossible for the country to grow the communications industry. The Centec had not been paying VAT. Centec had not been paying sufficient tax. The problem was solved. And then, less than 6 months later, the same officials repeat the same mistakes. And these are people at a very, very high level. And a lot of work had gone into trying to say we need to move in a different direction, a clean Centec that complies with the laws and the regulations of the country. We have to be a beacon for everybody else there. And so we had some disciplinary hearings around violations of PFMA and Treasury regulations and other regulations, particularly in ICASA. In a number of cases, some of the people have taken their cases to CCMA, and I think that we are defending the company at the CCMA. On the low power project, there were issues again of fraud. We specifically last November we directed internal audit into the capital project. As I said, we found that we are buying without following or respecting the rules of procurement by organs of state, particularly in support of the local trade and industrial policies. So we specifically then directed internal audit to the capital project, and certain things were found on the findings were made on the low power project. We held disciplinary hearings. Some people resigned. We looked at the contract. We could charge them. They resigned while they were still on leave, and the contracts allowed the company to act even when they tried to run away like that. We have submitted cases to the police to follow up on the criminal issues there, and we're also pursuing recoveries of the monies that were abused, the public funds that were abused. There is one case that I know of somebody, a former head of procurement, or acting head of procurement, who the evidence suggests that the public involvement in the low power project fraud issues, and it's quite taking a little bit longer than we expected, but we are pursuing on a daily basis, and I think because also it's a disciplinary hearing, it's a formal process. It will probably not say too much. It can provide some written answers on the challenges that we have, but they, some of them are structural and there's resistance on a couple of things to our actions. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me thank you, Mr. Mohapi, the acting chairperson, and your delegation. This is the first meeting. We will meet with you again. We will come to you. You can invite us even to come there so that to see for ourselves, we can hold a meeting there. We will come. Thank you very much, and for now, the meeting is adjourned. Honorable members, you can just let them go and then we will deal with minutes. please, before you go to your meetings. Thank you. Farewell.